couple of guidelines that that I try to follow when I moderate is that I ask people to speak for themselves, not say something is true for everyone or the way it is, but use words like, this is what I think it is, what I believe it is, my feelings are. So you take responsibility for your own self, what you're saying, and then the next person can have a counter point of view and still not have to knock down what you're saying, saying, this is what I believe. I think that usually helps things go a little better so we can listen to each other. The goal of the evening is not ending up with a resolution of different points of view, but simply a chance to express it, hopefully to express it in respect for one another. If you've spoken a couple of times and others haven't, we'd try to get the others to speak first, if you don't mind. And we'll try to wrap it promptly at 9. That'll give us just about an hour. If we don't make it that long, that's all right, too. But when we get to that point, we'll wrap it up. It won't be related to who is speaking at the time. It'll just be the time. Anybody who wants to stay after that can sit and chat. I think that covers it. We haven't arranged for anybody to lead off and present a point of view. So the option for this evening is simply to ask one of you to be willing to lead off with a comment about where you are regarding the issue of hunting, and I suppose the other issue is the hunting, non-hunting, or in wherever it may be, but also we're talking about the Cascades. Anyone willing?
Well, I brought this up a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Excuse me. Because I guess I was surprised at myself when I saw hunters come through the village. I grew up in a small community in Michigan, and you sort of had a choice carrying a gun when you were old enough to do so, or admit you were homosexual. At least it felt that way. I had an aversion for women, so I carried a gun. And I didn't hunt when I started to go to college because it wasn't convenient. I guess I wasn't that wrapped up in it. But enough about me. I was bothered when I saw hunters come through here because it was the first time I had seen people with firearms in the village, and so that's what was happening emotionally. Intellectually, I said, well, of course, they have every right to hunt, and then I started to investigate myself. What is it about us, those of us that have hunted or continue to hunt, that why do we hunt? And then I started thinking, well, is there a need to hunt? And for some people, it dawned on me that it's probably not the people that actually need meat that are out doing it. And someone said to me, well, if you eat meat, you're supporting this whole thing. And they pointed out the fact that beef production is more costly in terms of energy and resources consumed than hunting. And I've been a little perplexed by it. Talking with people, I found that there are a number of folks in all, both ends of the spectrum anyway.
Okay, good. Thank you, sure.
I grew up in a non-hunting family. I mean, there were no guns ever in of the homes that I was in as a child, but I, there we go. Just about to really share my story.
You're late.
My horse died. Some hunter shot him.
I never saw anybody like that when I was growing up.
This is the forum on Kierkegaard, right?
You're so wonderful.
Did I ruin a moment?
Yes, you did. Your timing was
That's
wonderful.
That's why I'm leaving.
Real good.
Why don't you try?
I'll try again. Can I try again? No, please. I just came from a community, the parish that I serve, that is has a strong emphasis on hunting in the fall, to the point where the kids got a day off school, a free day for hunting. And my first reaction to that was, ooh, you know, how can I do this? But then, in the years that I spent there, I learned an awful lot about things like the deer population that dies in the winter because there's not enough food, the balance of nature that's been disturbed by human beings just being there, and the experience of going to the home of a widow, a young widow, with two teenage sons. One night, who was packaging meat for their freezer from a deer that her son had gotten. And it was enough meat for that family for the whole winter. And it occurred to me that there are some who hunt for meat. And then listening to some of the young boys talk about how neat it was to spend time out in the woods with their dads and their uncles, and they weren't real sure that they cared whether they got a deer or not, but they had this wonderful experience of the only time they ever spent with their dad, a lot of them. And it was just, so I have some mixed feelings about that too, and I don't know exactly where I'm at, but I also like venison. So it's kind of hard to say that I'm absolutely close to it.
Okay, thank you. Who else?
Me?
Yes, Linda.
I was given a rifle when I was about 22 years old. Top for use for catting, little round thing about, I don't know, 3 inches round. Told to go out and get good. So I did. And then I shot a little bird because I thought, well, a tin wasn't anything to shoot at. But I never shot a little bird again until I started shooting starlings. And I even quit that. And they were ruining all other kind of birds. I also went deer hunting. And I thought I'd done a great thing to be equal to the men in the party. There were 13 of us probably, by shooting a deer. Luckily, I got one that didn't have a fawn. I say luckily because of how I feel now, but then I thought that was pretty nice. But after I shot the second deer, I quit entirely shooting deer. Or shooting anything. Then I want to say that one time we planted, Earl and I planted a big field of rye to turn under in the spring. And during part of the early fall, we had 18 great, big, beautiful geese. They stayed with us 12 days, and we watched everybody in the neighborhood so they wouldn't go and shoot them, either at early morning or late at night. Yet still, I will fight for anybody's right to do hunting if that's what they want to do.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a neighbor of Linda's living in Longview, same place as she does, and it's a great hunting town, although I do not hunt. My dad had a gun for years, but I won't hunt the animal because I love to see him alive, but I'll sure fight to stop anybody from stopping people from hunting because it is a crop that is to be harvested in the West.
Sure.
Years ago, it probably was more of a thing of going hunting to get meat for the family, but nowadays with refrigeration and transportation and things like that, I think that's a thing of the past. And, I think most hunters nowadays, except some that maybe live way back in the mountains and places like that where the game is a little more plentiful, but I think most of them do it for sport and as a challenge. I've hunted a few years myself, but that's quite a long time ago. But I hunted in a party. There was 5 of us. And we got together and planned a huge outing for about 4 or 5 days or whatever. And it was an interesting period. And of course, the object was to bring in a deer if we could, and which we did. We didn't always get one each, but whatever we got, we divided it up. As far as hunting for necessity or something like that, I think that area is past. But there's one little thing that he brought up that kind of bothers me is when the game department talk about a harvest, it seems like that's something that's necessary. And there is overgrazing and there's bad winters and things like that, but that's nature's way of thinning out the weak and and also the overabundance. So I don't think it's necessary to hunt in those or to remedy that situation.
Okay. I didn't want to stop you if you're done.
The only thing I might add was that when I did hunt and bring home a deer, we would eat it. It wasn't wasted. And after a few years, my children got so they didn't care for it. They never was real fond of it. But when they got to the point where they didn't care for it anymore, didn't want to eat it, I quit hunting because I didn't want to have it wasted. But now fishing is another situation. I still do that.
Okay. Somebody else?
I've never been a hunter either, or had guns in the family or anything like that. But, and I've had many friends who do, and I used to have more trouble with it. But one group of people that when I was working at mosquito control, a bunch of them were bow hunters, and I really gained a respect for that. I thought that was a really neat thing in that it wasn't so, I don't know, so easy or something like that. They really worked at it and they practiced. And I think it should also be said that they have to pay really high license fees and things like that, which go into supporting a lot of environmental programs. Like with my limited knowledge, I understand though, a lot of times hunters are, you know, some of the best people for supporting our environmental programs too. So I've gained a lot of respect for that. Even though myself, I wouldn't find myself behind, you know, the gun or whatever it's gonna be. I like to think that I have a very open mind about that now. And just what I assume a guy like Tom, I'm a buckskin, right? It's a muzzle loader too or something. I mean, the sheer idea that this is, you know, his thing or his sport. And I think there's something to be said for the fact that, yeah, when it was pointed out to me how many deer do die in a winter or something like that. And like you said, to use all that you done to, and to get only one deer per season. Like a lot of things that I don't have trouble with that anymore like I used to.
Jimmy, how was it?
Yeah, I'm still puzzled. I think my father's a good man, and he was a safe hunter and a conservative hunter, and we hunted pheasant. If he dropped one and couldn't find it, we hunted for it with flashlights until we found it. If we didn't, he was that kind of person. But he said to me one time, I said, well, why do you hunt? I mean, here I was 14 years old carrying a large shotgun. He said, well, I like being outdoors. I like that answer. And then he said, when the day comes and I don't get a thrill out of knocking that bird out of the air, I won't hunt anymore. And I wonder, you know, given the fact that deer are going to die, or there's too much game in a small area, how many hunters pull that trigger reluctantly? And that's something I still ponder about, and that is 1,000 years ago or so, when hunting was necessary for survival, I guess there were different ways to approach that. I mean, I understand that certain American Indian tribes used to thank the Great Spirit for sending the animal their way, and then would apologize to the animal for what they had to do to it, thank the animal for their for sustaining them. I think we're way beyond that. Somehow I like to think we are. And I wonder what it is in us that, I don't know how many of you guys when you were 10 years old or 6 years old got a thrill out of mutilating frogs or watching cats fight. No, it seems to be something we all go through. And I don't know what that is. I'm not sure that it's in some of us, or maybe myself, I'm a little afraid of that. If it isn't something in there, the thrill of knocking that bird out of the sky. Or if taking the deer, whether it's with one shot or with an arrow or with a semi-automatic 12 gauge shooting slugs at 20 yards, you know. There seems to be something in us. I'm not saying it's wrong to take animals off the land when it's necessary, but I wonder about this thing that makes us hunter. If it's part of being human, is this it? Or is it always going to be with us? That's something I'm a little afraid of, I guess.
I guess that, yeah, I understand that. I thought about that too, but I also wonder about just the matter-of-fact way we go about killing cattle, pigs, just for normal everyday use. I mean, I don't know which is worse, getting a thrill out of killing something or just killing it with very little regard at first one.
I don't know if anybody gets a thrill out of killing an animal. There might be the thrill on the fact that you sighted it on it, you might have shot a long distance and you brought it down. That's just like hitting bullseye on a paper target, you know. That is a thrill. Seeing what you did right. But there, I don't see any thrill in watching an animal die. I do it high. The death of the animal to me is a very small part of the hunt. And it's the beginning of a lot of work. And I haven't gotten anything yet. I've had a great time out there. Went a little hungry at times, but to me the thrill of hunting is getting out there and being in the woods, but not just like on a hike. And you start to listen in on sound so differently than walking down a trail. You're not really walking down a trail going from one point to the other. Everywhere you are is your destination, because you know your game might be right ahead of you or off the side. You're looking different. You're smelling things differently. Probably smell a little bit too.
I wonder how many hunters it would be if we could play tag with the animals. You run up and put a stick around and take a picture of the fact that you get
that. I think that's what bow hunting and muzzleloading in some cases is getting to be. It's sharpening your own skills a lot more. I don't know about pulling a trigger and try, you know, shooting something 350, 400 yards away or more, like they can do. That's, I think you're aiming a little tiny dot, you know. And the idea of, if you're stalking them, getting in close, you have to not think like a person anymore. And that's the challenge.
You know, I think we have two separate types of people at Holden, though. We have the people from this area, which is an unsettled area, and we have people, I've never been to your eastern part of the United States, but I assume they're a little more populated. And I have a large hunting group in our family. My nephews really hunt a lot. And one of my nephews just got a 380-pound elk with a bow and arrow just before I came up here. I'm pretty proud of him. I'd much rather have him out there stalking an elk with a bow and arrow than out here on drugs or something. And he is a kid that likes the woods like Tom. And I think it's our Western civilization that we're raised under out here. We might look at it a little different. We do not waste the meat. Everything is used, the meat, the hide, everything. If you go out for fun, which you mentioned, fun of killing an animal, I've never heard any fun to it. Because once the animal's down, then the work starts. So I don't see the fun for it.
Well, yeah. I think probably just because I know that what you're saying from your point of view, Carl, is true, but I know that also that there's a lot of people who live in L.A. and San Francisco, big businessmen who go out just for the trophy and just leave the meat.
I've seen a lot of that in Utah.
Alaska, too.
So the West has nothing to do with, you know, just because it's in the West doesn't mean that everybody in the West is going to be out hunting for the meat. There's going to be a lot of trophy hunters, too. A lot of people who are going to be out coming back and telling all their friends all the big kills that they've done, and maybe they've done them like they did in Never Cry Wolf, you know, where they run the beasts down until they're so tired they can't hardly move, and then they sit there in their airplane and pop them, and they go back and tell everybody how big of a hunter they are.
Jeff?
Carl brought up my pet peeve about hunting, and that's guns and drugs. I have no qualms about hunting overall, but I do have serious qualms about hunters who mix alcohol and bullets. And I've had a lot of experience with friends of mine who have been particularly bird hunters, because it's close to town. You run out to Skagit Flats or something, and you know, go for the geese when they're out there, and
you pick up a six pack along the way, or maybe 12 if you're feeling good, and then head for the flats. And those guys are right around. People live in cabins here and cabins there, and there are folks out there hunting, doing the same thing. That bugs me. And I've seen it up here too. I was coming down the Phelps Creek Trail 2 years ago, right before high hunt season started. And here were all these guys with their craziest contraptions I've ever seen, like a unicycle, like a big wheelbarrow with a Coleman cooler on it, and Rainier just all over it. And unfortunately, it wasn't just one group that way. Guns scare me to death. And, no. Yeah.
Somebody else.
I think hunting, like, suffers from the same kind of negative publication or whatever that something like hitchhiking does too, and that what you hear about a lot, like the bad cases of hitchhiking, you hear about all the bad stories and the bad encounters. And I agree with John, because I know that's a real common thing, and that's the thing you always hear about. You know, the guys that are sitting up in the trees looking for deer and getting loaded all day, and then, you know, they're sitting there with a gun but looking down the barrel of it too. And I don't know. It would be interesting to find out. And I have a feeling, as I have firsthand experience with hitchhiking, I think that the percentages of bad experiences are really small compared to all of the great experiences that you can have with it and how good it can be. A lot of people disagree on that. And I have a feeling that hunting can be that same way. You hear a lot of the bad stuff.
I think it's important to, especially what Ross said, hunters are, without a doubt, and by a far percentage, the most valuable contributors to natural resource management, to wildlife management. They're the biggest supporters of steel shot versus lead shot and waterfowl hunting. So it is, hunters are real valuable because they seem to be the ones, not the only ones, there's a lot of others, but they seem to be the ones that are putting the money where their mouth is. I mean, yes, we like to hunt, but we are going to support what we're doing. Now, if you're hunting elk or something, the license, you know, they're just amazing for what little meat, well, they get a lot of meat from elk, but they put out a lot of money for that. There's different categories of hunters. Everybody's kind of touched on that a little bit. But the hunters that I think a lot of us would respect, and Tom respects, I respect, are the hunters that when they say we've had a good time hunting, they're talking about they had a challenge. They were really challenged. They got out there, they were challenged. If their hunt was productive, then that was just a part of it. Another point I wanted to touch on was hunters are so essential for quote harvesting. It's just, you just can't. We would be in a lot of trouble with if there weren't hunters, because well, number one, the land is not available anymore for the game, and the game does get overpopulated no matter where you are. A case in point about the state I'm from is Iowa. They've had deer hunting there for over 40 years. The population of deer there now is greater than it's been in the entire history of Iowa. So there's a case where hunting has not bothered the deer population. But it's you do need that. I'll keep referring to Iowa because I'm familiar with that, but if we didn't have pheasant hunting or quail hunting in Iowa, the winters there are so severe that not that many animals would just simply die from freezing to death or from a real cold snow, and it's the same pretty much throughout the Midwest. So harvesting is essential because we have.
You're not saying. I think and I believe. You know, you're making flat statements.
I'm saying. Excuse me. We're just whenever I say we.
Okay. I said it was enough time, so it sounded like you were saying anybody who's against that really doesn't understand.
No,
that's not true.
No, I apologize. That's
okay.
Now I lost my train of thought. No, that's probably the point.
Cold winters.
Cold winters.
The population of ducks because it's
Okay, so things going on.
That's all right. Anyway, then there's one more point I wanted to, that Dennis and the, I can't name it.
Jim.
Brought up. I'm what I call a conscientious omnivore, in that I hunt and I fish, and I, you know, I can't say that I don't enjoy doing either of them. However, when it comes to eating meat, I'll abstain from any meat that has gone through production line. So it's not true that if you eat meat, you're all people that eat all meat are pro-hunting. That's probably not true. A lot of them aren't. Because like Dennis said, when you get a steak or something, so many people think, well, that's a steak's a steak you buy at a grocery store. Well, a steak is the muscle of a cow or, a pork chop of a pig or whatever the case may be. And a lot of people that are anti-hunters are just as bad because of the, and in fact, they're worse off because that the animal that's gone through the production line has been injected with various hormones to, induce muscle growth, et cetera. I guess I'm just kind of rambling on. It's kind of hard for me to get my line of thought. I have so much to say.
Sorry. So, glad to have you share how you feel about that. over there, please. Okay.
Well, I'm a little nervous about saying anything because I haven't really thought it through very much. But just as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking that it seems like is there a difference between? I know that that sometimes for me, when I think about people hunting an animal, it sort of pulls at my heartstrings, and I think, oh, that sweet little deer and those big eyes and the little bird and all that kind of stuff, and I think that another human being is a human being is killing that animal. The intention is to kill. And so I think I have, and yet I don't know where I come down on hunting. I'm just saying that I have that reaction, mm-hmm. that inner response. And I think, what is it about that for me that's hard? And is it that I want to know what's going on in the mind of the person? And does it depend for me on the attitude of the hunter? The thing about the harvesting, this is point number two. The thing about the harvesting doesn't quite make sense to me, because if we do have an overabundance of animals, it may be that there are other ways to manage that population besides hunting. I don't know what that might be, but maybe that says something about how we're using land, how we're expanding our cities, how much animal person space we need to be thinking about. That for me isn't an argument to say that hunting's the thing to do, because if conservation is our concern, maybe there's other ways to conserve. And yet people eat the food. So it's confusing, as we're sitting here talking, it reminds me of the issue of abortion in some ways. It's like the women I know who choose abortion, I can talk about how conscientious they are and how careful and cautious they are. And yet I know the pain they go through in making that decision about that potential life, and the pain I go through when I hear about that. Some of it feels analogous. I don't know if it's completely, but it rings that bell for me.
Thank you. Someone else who has not spoken yet. Yes.
Thanks. I was just thinking, growing up in Chicago area and coming out here, and even on this trip, and being from Greeley, Colorado, cattle country, and sitting on the chalet porch and watching four or five deer out in the front yard, the mental conditioning that I've had over my life of that the deer in the front yard are nature. Okay, that's neat. That's wild nature. And that there's a difference between wild and tame. Driving by the stockyards in Chicago or in Omaha or in Greeley, the response is whew! And coming up on the boat, the response is, everybody to the right side of the boat, there's a goat over here. And that, that's something so unique. And the uniqueness is it's foreign. It's not that it's, That's sort of where I struggle at times. And the other thought I was having sitting here is a feeling that hunting can be sort of like driving. You know, it doesn't mix well with alcohol and drugs. And there can be good drivers and bad drivers. And I wondered if hunting in itself, through the discussion for myself, you know, if the hunting is an issue, good, bad, or if it's the fringes and the people that are involved in the hunting that is they can make the good and the bad.
This is neither pro nor con, but in hauling these hunters up to this 10-day period that they have this season, I do find that it does scare our guests. And maybe that's good. They didn't look over the cliff. There was lots of good guys that hunt. But what I was going to say is, I watched those guys load, and those guns went into the pilot house of the boat. And I'm just wondering if there isn't food for thought that we could. I know you can't lay them on the bottom of the bus, but if they had a case on, it wouldn't bother the people. But just a straight old gun, and sitting amongst our guests. Isn't the best arrangement.
Good point.
I'd like to come back next year during that time, and I'd like to have comfortable
people. It's not against the law, though, to have your rifle out.
No, all he was saying is that for concern of our guests, is there a place to put them, safe place to put them?
Yeah, like so I say, both men put the guns in the pilot house.
I think that's required by law
on public transportation. Right. Yeah. I think what he's talking about, and our concern for guests, would we consider putting that, asking them to put it someplace so it wouldn't be next to some people who are uncomfortable. Yeah. At least that's what I understood.
Yeah, that's why I think it's something that should be considered in the years to come. Maybe a box alongside of the bus or something. I don't know. I don't have any answer.
Isn't the bus public transportation?
The difference between a license and a commercial license vehicle than ours. I don't think we're licensed.
No.
So I don't think it's the same. No.
I think that, you know, that's a good idea, but I think it might cause a lot of problems too. I rode up with a couple of hunters and they didn't have a carrying case. Some of them do. But, you know, they don't want anybody to touch their gun. You know, I mean, that's just kind of the mentality sometimes with some of those people. And I think that we have to be real careful about that.
Well, you're balancing their feelings and our guests' feelings. And that's where we're
going. But I think it could be more of a problem. But I can understand what you're saying. I would like to see that too myself, but I think it might be a problem.
I guess my thought is that I keep hearing this over and over again. We operate for our guests, and the bus goes down to pick up the guests. And that's, I think that we would have the right to refuse anyone to ride the bus if they wouldn't abide by our regulations.
Well, it seems to me that we could request something. We had something safe that they would put the gun in, so no one else had to handle the gun. It seems to me it would need to be a need of a big regulation.
Yeah, I'm just saying that if they said, no, we don't want to do that, it's just a natural thing of, well, that's what we asked you to do, and if you don't want to do that, you can walk up through the village. That's what.
Forest Service would have to
go
along with us on something like that, and then they would, because we're on Forest Service land. Mm-hmm. And we have to abide by their laws. So we're kind of tied, hands tied there.
Well, but we could request the Forest Service.
That's what I was saying, though. Maybe we could work something out with them.
Judy?
Well, speaking of the hunters coming into the village and the guests, that reminds me of another thing I thought while the hunting season was going on, and I know that another one's approaching, is that I sensed a tension between some of us who live here and the hunters. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm not sure that I sense the tension on the part of the hunters, but I sensed it on the part of us who live here. And I don't know, that made me feel bad, I guess. At one point I went out of my way to talk to a couple of hunters who had come back and had deer and bear. I was just trying to think of the love your enemies. I don't want to be too simplistic about it, but if some of us don't approve of hunting, I don't think the way to I shouldn't say that. I guess I am ambivalent about it, and I've had guns since I was a little girl, and my father and I used to go skeet shooting, and there is a real thrill for me about being skillful about that. So there was a part of me that really wanted to go out there and communicate, and I guess it seems to me that maybe approaching the hunters too could, I don't know, there could be some fruitful something come out of that. Who knows what, but.
Yes, you
know, specifically in the village, and then, you know, seeing them come through here was, and then you're just from the middle of July, but, you know, the deer were still coming in the village, and we had to shoo them away from the flowers and things, so they were being shooed away, and you kind of think, this is good. You write home and you say, you know, the deer come into the village, and we have to shoo them away from the flowers, and they get to the point where you can almost walk up to them, and we see a lot of deer, and but that's nice, you know, and after a while, you get almost possessive. You say, you know, that's neat, I like it, you know, they're wild, and yet they grow up without a fear of human beings. I say, that's good, I like that, you know, I'm proud to be a part of that, you know. And then, you know, it comes around one weekend, and there's a lot of strangers that come up with firearms, and, you know, they're blowing all that trust we've developed, you know, in a way. And when they come back and you see the hide and some of the meat, you go, do I know that one? You know, and I know they aren't human beings, and we don't talk to them, that kind of thing, but, you know, there's some kind of affinity that develops, and that's kind of the way I felt, and I felt the same way you did, Judy, or at least I felt I should be friendly with these guys, and I didn't want to go up and say, hey, thanks for shooting this deer that I've been looking at all summer, you know, because I couldn't quite do that, and yet I knew it was real important to say, you know, we love everybody. That's the idea of being a Christian. You try anyway, you know, you make that effort, and I was astounded at how difficult that was, you know, for all the liberal rhetoric. That was a real chore.
Thank you. Someone else?
Yeah, what you said about the deer and being friendly and their trust, that's been going on in this valley for since the mine's been here, you know. The deer that I saw up here when I was first up here, they're maybe old and already died or shot, and every year there's more deer to develop that trust. So it's not like by the hunters coming up, that's going away. That's still as much as it was before. But yeah, I don't like to see hunters come through the village. I don't. Yeah. Because I'm afraid they're going to go out and shoot a deer that's been around the village, and seeing those bucks up there fighting around the
circle. Can you tell me, because I don't know, what how far deer range, for example? I mean, is there, if someone says they took a deer up by Lyman, is there a chance that it spent time in the village, or are they more territorial?
Yeah, generally they tend to come on up the valley, migrate on up, and then I'm not sure that in the fall, if they're all moving back down, and then they disappear over the mountains down in Enya. But there's not that many deer that winter over in this valley. There's no food. Most of their food right now you see is the willow and the buckrush that they're working on, among other things, and that, as soon as the snow comes, that all gets buried, flattens down, so they, some will winter over at Lucerne, the rest of them leave. So yeah, deer up at Lyman might have spent time in here. But the deer I've seen around the village here, they tend to roam between here and maybe 9 Mile or here and Heart Lake and back. And I've seen deer around here that I've seen up on the trail to Heart Lake before.
Where are the shooting limits?
I asked when the rangers came in, Barry Huntington, I was really concerned because, you know, those high-powered rifles carry a long ways. And so I just kind of asked about the seas and what was legal and what wasn't. And then I got to ask them about Holton Village. And I said, well, what are the shooting limits at the village? And the shooting limit is 150 yards outside the boundaries of the village.
Any improved part of within the National Forest, 150 yards, not just here, but anywhere. So 150 yards from where we are, where the limit of the thing would be the mine or anything like that is where they can legitimately shoot.
Also 150 yards each side of the campground at the ballpark.
Yeah.
How about the trail? Is that 150 yards?
No, trail you can hunt.
That's right. Now it's improved, you know, structure or whatever, some other kind of improvement, not the cut trail in the forest. Yeah, we sat with them, we announced that to the people.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a few thoughts here that I've been based on someone after that week, but I'm not sure. I think I'm kind of going back to where my earliest formation about my attitude toward hunting is, and trying to think of my earliest experience around it. I think that has a lot to do with forming how I see things. But I remember when I was little, I used to have a BB gun, and I'd go out and I'd shoot at these little black specks up in the trees. You know, it's all kind of fun. I do it for a long time, never hit anything. the next finally I did one, and it fell down, and I went over and looked at it, you know, and it was warm, and it was a little blood coming out of his neck, and sort of that, I mean, it was like me. I felt so close and connected with it, and I realized at that point in time, I never would hunt again, in a way. That experience formed me in some ways, rigidly, perhaps. Another thing that I thought of was recently, I started bird watching, and I thought, I think probably birds are the closest I've ever gotten to wildlife, being mostly a city person with domestic animals. But bird watching, there's something about the binoculars that when you see things away like that, there's still sort of a distance, but the binoculars kind of allows you to come almost right into that world so that you're kind of, you know, invisible and yet in it, and so close to you, you can see the coloring and everything. And I was thinking there's something about me that responds to maybe the same way as a deer is getting close. Like, how can we kill when we're that close to the world? So another bias of mine is that a person who kills can't be that close to the world. The other thing was, which has already been said, but I just want to say it in my own way, is that when the hunters did come back in, I realized that I am very distant from their world, which means mainly I don't want to go out and do it particularly, but I'm very distant from them. So to come and talk to them, in other words, to jump almost with binoculars or to enter that world, it made me feel okay about hunting, about their hunting. It doesn't sort all the things out for me, but, you know, even to have you come in town and not really knowing you, but it's like there's so many different ways to go about it. But to get close to whatever it is, whatever it means for me to have to enter it, seems important.
Yes?
Yeah, I just
want to
give another point that I've been thinking about. Apart from the discussion about meat or no meat, killing or no killing, what came to my mind when I saw all these guys coming up there, because they were mostly men, is that hunting, for me, is well, it represents, or it's part of this male ideology. I've never been around hunters before, and well, I thought of all these other male images, like cowboys, or, well, mob rule, that sort of thing. I was kind of torn. I think a while ago I would have been angry at these guys for being probably tough male, which they may not be, probably, but have just looked at them like that. But then I was kind of torn, sensing this sense of adventure, which I would like to have too, sort of maybe a little jealousy or something. And then the other side being, well, you know, hunters. Well, they hunt, men hunt. The eternal male has always been hunting. Been hunting animals ever since, and been hunting women. And, you know, I can't equate that, because women have been prey for so long. And I haven't sorted this out. It's just something I wanted to bring up this thing.
That was my disappointment in the discussion so far. Yes. That had not been raised. Yeah.
I have a cousin that's the same age as I am, and when she was so like 16, she was a national rifle champion shooter, and she lived in Natchez, Washington, which is just close to Yakima. And she was shooting her deer every year since she was 16 till probably to today. I haven't talked to her for probably 15, 20 years. And it was the father with two daughters, and I think that's not a prominent situation in this area, but then again, it was kind of neat that went on. And I was raised in a hunting situation. I was a hunter myself. My father, I would go hunting with my brother and I. And that was a real important part of our life. And that went on for a long time. It was a really good part of our life. Just because I was 8 years old and took me along with them. And that was... I got a lot out of that. Being with my father and learning about the woods, I had a hard time with animals. I was raised on a farm where we'd go out and shoot a cow for meat, you know, our food.
we also hunted deer for food for a long time before it was became a sport. So it depends on what type of environment, I guess, you come out of. It is a challenge. Like somebody going to Las Vegas, possibly, and gambling. There's some gambling about in hunting the same way. There's some skills in gambling also. I think I had a lot of thought about this lately about also playing football. I played a lot of football when I was a kid, and all the stress and the the competition, that type of thing. And I really wonder, really what is good for a person, a kid, boy or girl, hunting or playing these real highly competitive sports. I think there's a parallel there, and I think that there's a lot of good things to be said, probably, I think now, after being through it, I think a lot more good things about come out of hunting, if it's done right, than there is in the athletic world today.
Just picking up on what Ingo was saying earlier, I was listening to the discussion about the men coming up with the guns and cases or those without, is that what struck me was that I found myself feeling fearful, not with the ones. I mean, with a gun, I knew it was a gun, I guess it was in a casing, but it were the men who came up and walked around with their rifles or their whatever kind of guns they were. Mm-hmm. That were so visible, and it scared me, and I didn't know why. I felt afraid, but I think I do now that Ingrid's talked a little bit about it. But it was more the ones that didn't have them in some kind of a safety device. I mean, like this one, which I look safe to me. I was also going to ask a question, and that is why. Do they keep the heads, and why do they mount them? That bothers me so much. When I was a child, I saw one in somebody's fireplace and believed that the other half of the deer was behind the fireplace for a long time. I felt so bad for that poor animal. I mean, to me, that's where the personal struggle comes in hunting.
One reason they pack the heads through the village is that it's a state law
to require. They have to do that?
The head has to be with the meat so that they can prove that you didn't just shoot a doe.
Yeah. Why do people...
As far as keeping the antlers go, it's just to show how big of a deer you got. As far as the whole head mount,
ego
probably. It's not the way to beauty, pretty. You know, you see a lot of stuffed animals in different museums and things, and you boo and ah those too.
Yeah.
So maybe it's something like that. You bring one part of it home.
One person's bowling trophy is another person's
dinner. Right.
I just wanted to ask that because I never really understood.
Elmer, I would hope that the hunters that do go through know that our people are out on the trails, and 150 yards isn't very far.
How much longer do we have, or how much longer is hunting?
Hunting season starts again 15th, if I recall. Is it right?
Pretty close to that.
And for,
About 3 weeks. Yeah.
Almost 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we got one going now.
There is a hunting season going.
Black powder's going now. Is that right?
There's not too many of those around here.
Okay.
I had a friend that was a bus driver, and he said when they got on the buses, you know, they thought since we're Christian and stuff, we wouldn't approve in their hunting, and the bus driver was trying to communicate with them, saying hi, all this kind of stuff, and he said that they would just sit there and just not do anything, just not pay attention to them, and also with the carrying the guns off the buses. Mm-hmm. It seemed like they enjoyed the power. I talked to a couple people and they had different views with it. And one person said they enjoyed just having the guns out and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
So
I didn't approve of that.
The hunters enjoyed the power. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, yeah. But I didn't approve what they said.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, thanks. Over here and in here. Yeah,
I agree with that. A hunter that spends that much money on a gun like that, there's no reason to have it out banging around in the wheelhouse on the boat and sitting on the bus with it and banging the scope and everything. They should have it in case, you know. And that indicates to me that they like to have it out where people can see it. And that bothers me. It doesn't bother me, but I know it bothers a lot of people. So we should have them.
In the discussion about overabundance or game to the point of where it's a nuisance around, if they didn't have the game department and the laws, there certainly wouldn't be an abundance. They'd be gone like the buffalo are. But right now they set limits, say, of a week or 2 weeks at a time. If there's more deer, they can lengthen that season in order to cut down the quantity, or they can lengthen it. And they spend a lot of money to do that. They even put fences in certain areas, like in Baker, Oregon, for instance. A lot of elk come down in the valley in the in the winter time, and so the game department built fences around the haystacks to keep them away from that. So there's a lot of money spent in order to maintain that size of a herd. But here in the, let's call it the lower 48, hunting is a different situation than it is up in Alaska. I had the opportunity to live with an Eskimo family here a few years ago, and it was 75 miles west of Wainwright. I mean, the town was Wainwright. All Eskimos there, no one else. There was about 75 families, and I was told it was around 300 people. Well, there was no vegetation growing up there. The tundra is the only thing. I mean, there was no vegetables or any fruits growing. And there was no transportation except the bush pilots coming into that town, so there was no food except the meat. And everyone talked of hunting. And the hunting parties would be formed, and they'd go various places to hunt. When they come home, they'd divide the meat up, because there was a lot of people who were too old to hunt for their meat. So as these hunting parties of the young people would go out and bring that stuff back in, it was divided up. And I thought that was quite unusual. But this family I stayed with, they said they were beginning to form a party, and they were going west up as much as 150 miles. He thought they might not go that far, but he invited me to go along with them. There was going to be 10 people in the party. Boy, would I love to went on that trip. I've been there, I was only there 3 days, and I'll tell you, when you have 3 days without any vegetables or fruits, you get kind of hungry. So I declined and came back down here. It was quite a deal. The little kids and the big ones, everything is the hunt and the hunting parties and things. Well, we don't have that down in this area, but when they feed you caribou and whale meat for 3 days, you're ready to come back to the lower 48.
Okay. Anyone else?
I just have one.
Yeah, Mark.
Susan had mentioned that she got afraid when she saw the guns. Mm-hmm. And I can remember years ago, I used to hunt with my dad, and him saying that one of the most dangerous of weapons is the so-called unloaded gun. Because so often you hear of people getting shot by unloaded guns, ones that they thought were unloaded, were a shell. So we used to always, whenever we would not be hunting, we would break our guns down, or else at least pull the firing pin back, so you knew there was nothing in there that could do any harm. So many people think they don't have any shells in their guns, when in actuality they do. And I knew a guy that thought his gun was unloaded, a shotgun, crawled over a fence on a shotgun and blew himself apart because both barrels went off, and he thought they were both of them were empty. And so an unloaded gun sometimes can be very dangerous. Another thing that has always kind of upset me, I almost got shot by a guy one time because he must have thought I was a deer or something. I was out in the open and
a doe.
But I heard the shot come right over me. And there are so many people. And of course the odds, somebody had mentioned the fact that the way Tom hunts I think is admirable, because he stalks the deer and he has a gun there that he has to really get close enough to the deer. But when you start using telescopic sights and high-powered rifles where you can shoot them from 350 yards or 400 yards, the odds are quite diminished in favor of the deer. And although I've seen people stand within 20 yards of a deer with a telescopic sight and miss 12 yards. So.
It seems like there's two issues that I've heard and that I've thought of. One is the fairness, like Marsh was just talking about, as far as fairness to the animal. You know, and I really struggle with that, though, because, you know, if you're killing an animal, I don't know how it's different from killing a domestic animal. You know, the chances that a cow is going to get away when you're ready to slaughter it are pretty minimal, you know, something like that. So, you know, I'm not a vegetarian, or I will eat meat, which brings to mind the other point that I often think of, especially after a summer of cooking, is thankfulness for any food that we have. You know, so often people come up to the cooks or to kitchen people and say, well, you know, where's the meat or where's the vegetarian dish? And forget completely that they're being nourished and fed. And to me, that's a real important issue to look at, including in hunting.
Someone else? About a minute? Yes, Linda?
Washington at least has a course that young people have to go through before they get their first license. I don't know how many other states,
what about,
probably a lot of them.
What about for older people? Do they have to take that?
I don't think so.
It's required in Minnesota.
It is required in Minnesota.
I think it's 16.
For children, I mean, young people?
Well, they cannot use a firearm until they're at least 12 years old, and then they have to take the course.
No, an older person coming in for a first license would not, or would?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Greg, earlier you made a point about hunters being the best conservationists, and maybe I can help.
Speaking of their money flow, not necessarily the hunters themselves.
Okay, well, maybe we should define hunter. Is that anyone who buys a license and has a gun? Or?
Oh, no. Like I said, there's several boxes of them.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, it seems to me like I've heard more unsettledness among people here to the hunters themselves rather than the fact that an animal's life is being taken. And maybe that says something too. More people talk about being uncomfortable about hunters.
I didn't hear that. Just to show we heard two different
things. Okay,
I did not hear that. Maybe you did. Sure.
Do you feel it stands out?
No, I don't like a lot of the hunter mentality that I do see.
I think, Thomas, that part of that is people dealing with the fact that, I mean, that it remains at such a broad issue for people, and that it's a rare time that you're really confronted with the reality of it, and you have to admit maybe that there it's more complex than you wanted to admit. And I've appreciated tonight people making connections between the trail and the hunter, and a lot of other things, like how do we use our land, how do we sit down at the table whenever we, how do we treat women as men and men, you know, as women, because I think those are wrapped up, and I don't think it's just hunting and not hunting. So I think when people, I think myself was a point of case of just not wanting to have anything to do with those people, you know, really, broad, generalized way, not even it takes time to kind of sift it down. This helps.
Is there time for another comment? I just know one.
Okay.
The collective kind of aspect of it. my first response to it was very negative. I have to realize. And the first rebuttal that I got back was, listen, this is a good thing for men to do together. Men rarely, you know, they build a great sense of camaraderie when they're out there doing this kind of thing together with a goal. A couple things that I think are, first of all, the most repulsive form of hunting that I know around that is the fox hunt in England. I mean, I was over there, I saw that happen. I mean, it's just, what a dumb, I need to do that. I'm not very good at making these up, I just can't understand. I mean, what a waste of energy, and to chase this fox down and talk about brutalization of the animal. I mean, that was kind of the ultimate form of it. Not only people, but dogs after having tea in the middle of it and all the rest. But the other, so they said that. I said, ah, yes, it must be a good thing for men to do. But then I thought of other instances where I've talked to men, and they've said that probably their best friendships and their Well, this whole sense of a person was formed in their experience of war when they were together with their military buddies, and a lot of them 10, 15 years after nothing. You know, I feel so lonely. I've never made that kind of connection with men again. And my thought was to somebody, you know, about that thing there is, I don't know what it would be like if men do want to do that together, if every other year they would go out and not stalk the prey or, you know, do the killing, but find another goal as their way to be together or something. So that confuses me. I don't want to do that.
We did run out of our time. Appreciate all your cooperation and chatting and sharing very much.